Hey, everybody, this is Jason Smith along with Tim Stevens, and we are back with the Kayfabe Controversy Podcast. And in today's episode, we are going to continue with our Owen Hart Memorial Tournament. We have our 4-5 matchups coming up for you in this one. We're also going to be talking about Money in the Bank 2020 and the likelihood of a WWE sale. We'll get into that as well. First, I don't know if I would call it big news, but news nonetheless. There's some reports circulating out there that Joe Hennig, the son of Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, also known as Curtis Axel, has been released by the WWE. And, you know, it's probably the best thing for him. Really hasn't done a whole lot in pretty close to a decade. He's been sort of a joke, and not in the sense that he's a terrible wrestler or that he's, you know, a bad performer. He just had crappy gimmicks. He had the Axel Mania thing, the Royal Rumble thing, the B Squad, and it just the Miztourage, and none of it really got over, with the exception of the B Squad a little bit. But it was basically like Social Outcast 2.0, which was more or less like 3MB. And so I'm happy to see him go, mostly because I think he'll catch on somewhere else and he'll be a lot better off. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it too, Tim.
I think he'll be, well, it depends. I think if he ends up in somewhere like NWA or something, I think he would be huge there. I think he'd probably do some good. Good for himself in AEW. I'm glad to see him go. I agree with you. Terrible gimmicks. I actually think that was one guy, you know, with who his dad was and his lineage. You know, why didn't you have him put on the neon and black singlet and carry on his dad's gimmick? Just a thought that I always had. I know, you know, he didn't really have the blonde locks or anything like his dad did, but I don't. It's just one of those guys, I think, man. The thing is like when he was in those gimmicks, though, it kind of got over.
Yeah, he's a lot like Cody in that he was stuck with this ridiculous gimmick that he didn't like. He did it to the absolute best of his ability. It kind of got over organically a little bit just from the way that he and Bo Dallas would present them. And it worked, but it didn't.
And I don't know, man. And like, honestly, of course, that's kind of what we're talking about in our tournament too. Like, his dad never really got the push that he should have gotten.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and before his WWE time and his WCW time, like, Kurt Hennig was a huge star. But yeah, no, all in all, man, I agree with you. Like, I think that it's the best thing for him. And no matter where he goes, I think he's definitely going to be better off. And I think he'd thrive in New Japan now too, to be honest with you. But
yeah, I mean, he's got that build and that look that a lot of those Gaijin guys can get over.
We'll see what happens. I think he's one guy that would just be awesome in the NWA.
Yeah, and that kind of, you know, when you, I didn't think of it to start, and when you brought it up originally, I kind of thought to myself, you know, what if he did sort of the Colt Cabana-esque sort of freelancer where he wasn't really tied down to one specific promotion, where he would dabble in NWA a little bit and be sort of in that upper mid-card kind of title picture with the national title and, you know, a television title, go to AEW and kind of dabble in their mid-card with their new TV title that they've got coming out, and work with guys and get over some of those young guys who have a lot of that skill, like MJF and like Sammy Guevara, and continue sort of a mentor that's not quite as old as Dustin Runnels is, no offense to Dustin, but, you know, can still sort of relate to some of those younger guys in a way, but has the mileage to where he could be somebody that they listen to, and then go to like a New Japan and maybe participate in G1 or something like that, and, you know, and just kind of dabble around and be not necessarily hugely over in one place, but just sort of really well respected around the globe.
Question for you, and this might be a funny question because I know, you know, it being that what we've talked about here and the champions that we've had, you know, the past few months all being, you know, older, is he, do you think he's too old for a good championship run in one of the companies?
I don't think so. I think if you book it right, I think NWA, he would be perfect for NWA for their title run if they wanted to put him in that main event picture. Nick Aldis has had the title for a good long time. You know, and they, he went before pre Cody Rhodes and that, you know, angle with him and Nick Aldis, he was working with Tim Storm, who's up there and he's not exactly a young buck anymore. Right. And, you know, so I love the direction that Billy Corgan has taken NWA. And I think if he's packaged right and the storyline works, you know, I think Joe could be a really nice asset to NWA, and I think he would be great for Nick Aldis. And no, I don't think he's too old at all.
That and this is kind of off subject to what we're talking about, but that kind of brings me to a point real quick that I wanted to touch on. Do you think that Billy needs to step in and get some of these guys? And if he does, and he gets the right guys that will come there and can perform it. I love NWA, and I think NWA right now is the best product out there, my personal opinion. But do you think that he can put together a good enough roster to put him over the top? Like I said, to me, and this is just my opinion, I think they're already at the top, but do you think that he could get, you know, enough of those guys, he could put them over AEW and they could put them over WWE?
I don't know if the NWA could ever be bigger than the WWE just because of the way that NWA operates their product. They're old school, traditional studio wrestling where, you know, WWE has started to go to that in a sense with the Empty Arena Performance Center, where if they screw something up, they just stop and restart. And kind of go, not necessarily go back to the beginning, but go back to, you know, where they screwed up and do it again. And you know, during, you know, house shows and dark matches back in the day, Vince would literally come out and stop the match and tell them to do it again. And, you know, now they're getting more into that. And I think, you know, with Joe Hennig's experience in that production realm, I think he's a huge asset for NWA. And if they can get a couple of guys like that who are familiar with that pre-taped studio style, quote unquote, wrestling, I think it'd be great. Nick Aldis came from Impact when they did all of their Impact shows and they were taped, with the exception of the pay-per-views. He's perfect for NWA. You know, so a lot of their other guys, though, don't necessarily have that type of experience. It's all live in front of a crowd, you know, the pay-per-view shows. But yeah, I think he would be great. And I think if they could bring in a couple of those other guys who never really got the right kind of push, but had the talent, like a Bo Dallas and like, you know, a Curtis Axel and those guys, I think they could be on par, if not slightly above Impact and Ring of Honor, but not quite New Japan WWE level.
Fair enough.
And that's just because, you know, Billy and Dave Lagana don't have the resources that New Japan and WWE have.
Right.
But yeah, you give Billy Corgan Vince McMahon money, and I think he could easily blow WWE out of the water. He's got a surprisingly really good head for the business.
I agree. I actually was watching something on YouTube the other day about Billy and wrestling. And, yeah, he seems to have a great mind for the business, and he loves the business.
Yeah, that's the thing, is he loves it. He cares about it, but he understands it. He's not like a, you know, and this is, I guess it's an insult to Tony Khan, but I don't mean it to be an insult to Tony Khan, the CEO of AEW. He's not a mark like Tony Khan, where he's friends and a fan of wrestling. He's, you know, and he's friends with a couple of guys who might be a little bit over, and then that translated into utilizing those connections and his checkbook to build a wrestling promotion, you know. And Billy has a passion for the business. He's also, I mean, he loves it and he's a fan, but he also has a little bit of change to where he can spend some money and put out a good product, but he understands his quote unquote place in the wrestling world.
Right.
Okay, so with that in mind, and we're talking about the nostalgia and the good old days of a peak NWA, let's talk about our 4-5 matchups for our Owen Hart Memorial Tournament. For you, your 4-5 matchup is Roddy Piper and Don Morocco. So go ahead and take it from here.
Well, this is tough. I'm a huge Piper fan. You know, I'm going to actually go, though, with Morocco here.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with heel Morocco. And I know, you know, you've got Piper, and so Piper will still be alive in this thing. But I think Don was one of those big, powerful guys. You know, he had an Intercontinental Championship run. I think it was, what, 82, 83, something like that?
I believe you're correct. Yeah, 82, 83, somewhere in there.
And, yeah, again, I think, you know, by the time you and I were around to know what was going on, he was I think he had changed to The Rock by then. And he was another guy, too, that was overshadowed by Hogan, I think, and especially with that look. You know, you kind of got the same look as the main guy, but they're putting all their chips in on the main guy. So, but you know, with Piper, like I said, basically the one reason why I'm not having Piper go over here is because you've got him, and I think you already had him go over anyways. Mm-hmm. And Piper, you know, and we said this before, you know, he's a major player. You know, he was a big, you know, rival for Hogan in the early days. And you know, when he made that, whatever you want to call it, when he was in WCW against Hogan in the NWO, you know, Piper was always there on the big stage, but he just never really got that push. He was never really the man. And so I'll always respect Piper's work. I'll always love Roddy Piper. He's one of my all-time favorites. But this time, Morocco's going over with the help of Heenan.
Yeah, I'll be brutally honest. I was never really a fan of Don Morocco's work growing up, but I mean, I came into, you know, as a kid, late era Don Morocco, the post Mr. Fuji run that he had, where he would feud with Ricky Steamboat and WrestleMania 3 time frame where he tagged with Bob Orton for a little while, and then went into his Rock character in 87, working with Billy Graham for a little while there, and then off he went. I think it was probably because he and Dino Bravo were so similar, like body style type wise and sort of demeanor kind of thing. They just reminded me like of Incredible Hulk wannabe Wonder Twins kind of thing. I don't know. Maybe that, I don't know what it was. I wasn't a fan. And then I go back now and I watch his work and I'm like, oh, okay. He was pretty good. And, you know, he was pretty awesome. And, you know, he was great.
One of my all-time favorite matches is him and Snuka in the steel cage too. So,
yeah. Yeah. That one, I think, turned everybody on to, just how great both he and Snuka were.
Snuka was another guy we almost could have included in this too.
Yeah. If he, you know, had not, you know, murdered somebody. But that's a story for another episode. My 4-5 matchup is Scott Hall and Magnum TA. Magnum, God, what could have been with Magnum TA? he was great in Crockett. He had the North American Heavyweight Championship for a little while. He beat Mr. Wrestling too. And then he went to Crockett for a little while, did the U.S. heavyweight angle. He and Flair had an awesome 30-minute match in September of 85, I think it was. And then he had his U.S. championship run. And then in late 86, he had that car accident that hit, basically his back exploded, more or less. And it was just unfortunate, you know, that he got cut short right when he was about to probably become one of the biggest names in pro wrestling at the time, especially because he was getting that grooming for the NWA world title and working with Flair and doing all of that stuff. And it was great. I loved his work. I thought he was awesome. And it's sad that it was cut so short because of a stupid decision on his part. And, you know, he was driving drunk I don't know if he was drunk, but he was, something happened there, and I'm not sure what went down. It might have been bad weather or something, but anyway. So Magnum was one of my favorites in that whole what could have been, and Scott Hall was another, right place, wrong time kind of guy, like Piper. He's a lot like Roddy Piper in that, he could have been world champion in WWE. But he decided to leave and before he could take that mantle. I mean, I think he probably arguably would have been next in line after Brett left and Shawn needed somebody else to feud with after they realized that Nash wasn't going to draw as a main eventer, as a world champion, the way that Shawn did and the way that Brett did. I mean, there are a few people who are going to draw like Brett. You know, Sean was one of them. I don't know if Scott Hall would have been able to do it, but, you know, he just had bad timing and he left for WCW before he could get that WWE title run. And then he gets to WCW and he runs into the roadblock that is Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash and Goldberg and, you know, Randy Savage. And he's just blocked by name after name after name that sort of either was going to stand in his way because of who they were and their ability to draw money, or they were the next big thing like Goldberg. And it was unfortunate. And Scott was just, it sucks that he was just right place, wrong time kind of guy. And, but this one, I'm going to go with Magnum TA on this one for the sole purpose of what could have been, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. My question for you is, And we've had this conversation before, and not really about him, but it kind of got me thinking. If imagine that Magnum TA hadn't gotten in the accident and he'd had a big run in NWA, do you think that he would have? I mean, let's just face it; he probably eventually would have ended up in the WWF.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he would ever gotten much above the Intercontinental title picture, or do you think he would have just been another Kerry Von Erich or another Scott Hall or another Kurt Hennig or even for that matter, even guys that went there late in their career that didn't win a title like Harley Race or Dustin Rhodes or somebody like that?
I think at that point he was going to be probably in his prime, right? I think if he goes there, it's probably 88 by the time he gets there, 1988. I think he probably hangs out in WCW, NWA, 86, 87. Then WWE starts that upward trajectory to where they're really starting to take off. And you had, I think he's in the WWE Championship Tournament picture after Hogan left, after Andre vacated the title. And then I don't know if Duggan wins the Rumble. I think Savage wins the WWE title, but I don't know if Duggan wins the Rumble. I think that might have been TA that gets that. Or King of the Ring. With DiBiase won it in 80-88. But yeah, I think he would have been a main event player. I don't know. That's a really good question. It definitely would have made for an interesting picture because I think you keep the Mega Powers together a little bit longer. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's just one of those things, you know, you always wonder, like, what the hell would have Vince done if he'd had this guy? Or when Vince had this guy, what the hell was Vince doing with him?
Yeah. Either he has him as a top dog in the Intercontinental picture, or he serves as a transitional champion between Hogan and Savage and DiBiase, to where when you eventually get to the Mega Powers splitting up, one of them, either Hogan or Savage, beat TA for the WWE title, and then I don't think we see him in that picture again. I think he slides back down to the upper mid-card Intercontinental picture and kind of makes a really good living there until the Bret Harts and the Shawn Michaels come along.
Okay, I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. That's all.
Yeah. Okay, so in the tournaments, in our next round, you have Greg Valentine taking on Don Morocco, and Scott Hall will meet Kurt Hennig. And on my side, we've got Owen Hart, Ted DiBiase, Roddy Piper, and Magnum TA.
Scotty Hall, Kurt Hennig, former tag team champions, weren't they?
Yes, they were. In the AWA. Okay, so coming up on May 10th, we have the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. The pay-per-view is supposed to go down in Baltimore, and instead will be at Titan Towers in Stamford, Connecticut. The reason for this, aside from the fact that, you know, we're dealing with the COVID-19 thing, is WWE has a penchant for whenever they get a new toy, they break their old one. You saw it with the DX Express, which was, I think, the Lex Express at one time. They blew that up. They blew up Vince's plane. They destroyed one of Vince's Corvettes. Well, now they're going to completely destroy Titan Towers. They're going to be moving into a new building next year. And so why not completely trash Titan Tower? And so we'll get to the gimmick stipulation of Money in the Bank ladder match, because I think it's I'll give you my thoughts on it when we talk about it. But first, there are five matches that have been confirmed. The first one, I want to get your thoughts on it, Tim, because I know you were really strong about this. It's Braun Strowman, Bray Wyatt for the Universal title.
I guess my thought is on it. Of course, I think Braun should retain. And I don't. And I know, how can I put this without coming off as crass or I know what wrestling is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But however, with that being said, when you have a guy like Braun Strowman and you at least want to bring some kind of credibility to it, there really isn't a guy, even if it's Bray Wyatt, on your roster who should be able to touch Bray Wyatt. My own personal opinion, I'm for the old school, big, giant. Yeah, he can't do a whole lot, but he doesn't need to. Okay.
Right.
That being said, I don't know if he'll retain here. I thought maybe they were saving, you know, Wyatt, or they were going to save Reigns for SummerSlam, but obviously they're going to put the title back on Wyatt and have him drop it to Reigns at SummerSlam, I'm assuming. Maybe I could be wrong, but I don't get the abruptness of taking the title off of him to somebody like Goldberg, putting it on Braun, and then putting it back on Bray, if that's their intended direction.
Right.
But I also think, though, that if, you know, you've had this guy running through everybody, And, you know, you've had Braun run through most people. I really don't understand the whole, you know, why they had him drop the title to Sami Zayn thing. Because at that time, they weren't, you know, he wasn't even in the Universal title picture. But, you know, if Braun does go over, I think they have to go now and give him the credibility that I was just talking about. Like, this is our dude, you know, he's a monster among men. And you know, I almost think that if they have him go over Bray, they almost have to give him the Brock Lesnar treatment. Like, he's this beast and he's untouchable.
Yeah, no, and I completely see that side of it. I've read a million times the original plan was Goldberg beats Bray, and then at Mania you had Goldberg and Roman Reigns, and the plan and it was solely because Vince didn't want Roman to be booed out of the building at WrestleMania. And he knew if it was Bray Wyatt, who the Fiend character was super over, goes into a match with Roman Reigns, Roman's going to get booed out of the building. So they needed somebody else to take that heat off of Roman, and Goldberg was that guy. And then you have Roman win the title at Mania. SummerSlam comes around, Roman drops it back to Bray, and then everything kind of resets. Now they've sort of booked themselves into a corner because, like you said, Braun theoretically should be booked as a world beater. He shouldn't be on every TV tape or TV appearance. He shouldn't be, you know, taking on, it should be your biggest and best that are trying to take him down. And if you're going to go with a smaller guy, you know, even like a Sami Zayn, when they had that little mini angle going and they put the title on Sami, they booked it well in that he always had Nakamura and Cesaro with him. And that was how he won the title, was the three of them sort of distracted the life away from Braun, and that opened the door for Sami. You know, and it made it moderately credible for Sam. It's like, oh, okay, Braun kind of lost his head for a minute and Sami took advantage. It definitely wasn't like a Rey Mysterio Big Show thing where, you know, Rey goes out there and beats him clean. You know, in a real street fight, if I go up against a dude who's 6'8", 355, I'm going to get my ass whipped. I mean, even if the dude can't fight, I'm still going to take a beating. And so I think with Bray, the mind games and the whole Strowman Wyatt family connection, I think could be interesting if they do it right. I would love to see Braun retain because I think Bray is much better as a hunter than he is as a champion. And I think his gimmick works better when he can play those mind games and he can do those things that makes the Bray Wyatt and the Fiend character good. And then lose, because he's still going to be over at the end of the day.
I agree. I don't know. It's going to be, I'm not going to be surprised if Braun retains, but I'm really not going to be surprised if Bray wins either. So.
Right. Okay. Next up is the WWE Championship. Drew McIntyre coming in as the champion against your favorite wrestler of all time, Seth Rollins. I don't see how you can take the title off of Drew right now. I just don't.
I agree. Matter of fact, I think Drew's going to have a lengthy run, and it's not my disdain for Seth or anything like that. I just, I don't think you can take the title off of him already. And even if you do, I don't think that Seth's the guy to do it.
Yeah, I think, again, Seth is one of those guys that makes a better hunter than he does a champion. His gimmick works when he is in a quest. When he reaches the top of the mountain, his gimmick doesn't really work. Drew is one of those dudes where now he's got it, and it's a lot like Kofi. You got to give him a long run, because now that he's got it, to turn right around and pull it from him just sort of slaps your fans in the face. And it slaps Drew in the face, because this dude has busted his ass for the last, 12 years to get to where he is right now. And yeah, to snatch that away from him so quick, I think is just shitty. And it would be shitty booking on their part. And, you know, you book yourself into a corner, but I think, I would like to see a guy like an Aleister Black or to a lesser extent an Andrade have an epic feud with Drew. That's a long booked feud, 50-50 up until the payoff, and then Drew drops it to somebody where he could be like, yeah, okay, you know what, you're a bad dude and you beat me, and that's the end of it. But just my opinion.
Okay, then.
I love Seth Rollins, don't get me wrong, I think he's one of the best in the world, but I don't think he works gimmick wise as a champion. It doesn't make sense. I agree. Next up is Bayley and Tamina for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Bayley's had a hell of a run. Something tells me that Tamina's gonna win this match, or they're gonna do the women's Money in the Bank ladder match early, and someone from that match is going to beat Bayley or make it a triple threat, and they will become the champion. Just my thought. Yeah. So with that in mind, we'll go to the women's Money in the Bank ladder match first. The gimmick this year is that all of the matches will start on the ground floor of Titan Tower, and they basically fight their way up to the roof at Titan Tower, which I believe is 4 or 5 stories. And then there's a ring up there and a ladder ladders and a briefcase suspended above the ring that's on the roof. And whoever gets to that briefcase first is your Money in the Bank winner. It's an interesting twist on the Money in the Bank match, and I think it's an interesting idea. And I if they do it right, I'm thinking like it's more like Boneyard match, but with more action. And if it's shot that way and produced that way, I think it works. But I think if it's just, you know, 6 men or 6 women or whatever, and you book them and you produce the match so that somehow they're fighting upstairs or what, I don't know how that works if it's just a straight up match. But we'll get into the talent: Asuka, Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans, and then either Mandy Rose or Carmella. I like Lacey Evans for this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's Asuka or Baszler.
I'm going to go with Evans. I think her time's coming up, and of course she'll probably win, and then they'll make her cash it in to wrestle Charlotte Flair for the NXT title anyway. So
I think in this, you know, like I said a second ago, I think this is the opportunity that if Lacey Evans wins the Money in the Bank ladder match, or really whoever wins the Money in the Bank ladder match, takes on Bayley or Tamina, and you know, later on in the pay per view, and wins the title and sort of snatches it away from Bayley that way.
I could see that happening too.
Yeah. All right. And then the last match that has been announced so far, in part anyway, Daniel Bryan, Rey Mysterio, Aleister Black, Baron Corbin, either Otis or Dolph Ziggler, and one more competitor for the Money in the Bank ladder match on the men's side. Originally, I believe Apollo Crews was supposed to be in it, but I think he's hurt. And so I don't know if that's still going to go on, or if they're going to figure out how to book that in. Yeah, so let me see if I can get an updated card. Yeah, Daniel Bryan, Aleister Black, Rey Mysterio, King Corbin, and then Otis or Ziggler. So that's where it's at. This one, I like Daniel Bryan for it, but he's already sort of said that he's backing away from full-time competition a little bit. And that his body just can't do the full-time thing. I like Aleister Black for this one, but I wouldn't be shocked if Baron Corbin gets it.
I'm glad to see that they have some of the more mid-card guys in it. Obviously somebody's going to get a push.
out of it. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm with you, to see Black or Corbin. I'm probably thinking Corbin, but there's a part of me really that is hoping, and something's telling me that maybe Ray's going to get one more run, albeit small, but I think Ray's going to get one more run.
Do you think then at that point, do they have to take the title off of either Drew or Braun in order to make the transition to Ray more believable, well, I guess? Kind of what we were talking about with Ray and Big Show and beating him clean.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, by that theory you do, but, you know, there's always... maybe somebody runs in and costs Bray the title. I don't know, but I mean, really, with all those guys, you would have to do that. To be honest with you, I really think that the only guy to me that I think would have a good feud with Strowman is Baron Corbin, or even with Drew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've tried to get Baron Corbin over, and it hasn't worked. I don't really care about the King Corbin gimmick, but he has, if you listen to interviews where he's not, you know, running gimmick, he's got a great head for the business. He's super smart, knows what the hell he's doing, and he understands the psychology of everything. And I think if he wins it this time around, it didn't go well the first time he won it, but this time around, if he were to win it, I think he could do well with it.
I wouldn't either be surprised either to see Otis get it, to be honest, because people love him. And it might be Otis' time for a push. So. That's actually one of the more intriguing Money in the Bank matches that they've had in a long time, to be honest with you.
It really is. And I'm going to tune in solely for the... I don't even want to call it the shock factor, but solely for the intrigue of battling through Titan Tower. All right. With that out of the way, I kind of want to get to a couple of rumors that have been circulating around the last couple of days with regard to Vince McMahon possibly selling WWE to either Fox or ESPN or Fox and ESPN. I don't know if I could ever see Vince selling the company, at least his majority stock, to anybody whose last name wasn't McMahon, except for Triple H.
You know, I was thinking the same thing, and I agree with that. But my thought here is, and granted, you know, he put a lot of money into it, but the XFL was actually, to me, successful this time around. And I realized it got cut short because of COVID-19, but they filed bankruptcy on it, and it's done and gone, and it's not coming back.
Well, I will say this, though, with regard to the bankruptcy filing for the XFL, I think it was basically a protection to where they could hold off on paying creditors until all of this crap is over with. And then I think you see a rebuilt, restructured XFL in terms of who owns what stock and sort of shifting all of that around, and then maybe come back next year with a different behind-the-scenes ownership in place. But the same product.
That got me wondering too. Like, is Vince finally done? Like, is he getting out of the business? Is he going to, you know, is Vince really? But that's part of me, and the other part of me is with you. Like, there's no way Vince is going to just let his company go. It was his dad's company. Vince built it to what it is. You know, he's got Triple H and Stephanie there that are pretty much running the show now anyways. And Shane's back around in the picture. And so unless, you know, whoever, you know, ESPN, their parent company is Disney. I'm not sure who.
Yeah.
Same with Fox.
Same with Fox.
My question is, you know, unless they just are offering Vince an insane amount of money and he just can't say no to it, it would be interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I've always held the position that Vince is going to die in that chair. He won't leave until he is stone cold dead in the ground. But I think right now his plan is to back away a little bit from the daily grind of things with the WWE and leaving it to guys like Triple H and Paul Heyman and Stephanie and Shane, and letting them sort of produce everything and letting the writers write and letting the executive producers produce and letting the agents agent and do all those things and not be as hands-on to all the minute details and micromanaging everything as he used to be. It not be as Vince as Vince has been over the years. The one thing that I think could be at issue here is not necessarily WWE per se, but the content, the library, similar to what WCW did and to what Impact did. You know, when Impact had their financial troubles, they started selling their library hand over fist to their AJ Styles owns most of his tape. Kurt Angle owns most of his Impact tape. I mean, so, and they get royalties anytime somebody watches a pay-per-view or whatever with those guys on it. I could see WWE selling that piece of it and letting a Disney handle that piece of it. You know, it's a moneymaker, and you know, I don't think Disney is going to come up with an offer that's going to blow Vince away to sell the entire company, number one. But number two, I think there are things that the WWE Network could do better, and I think they could be done better by a company like Disney. And so to have a company like that handling all of your shit, you already have a relationship with Fox as it is, and you're starting to get more and more involved on the ESPN side of things. I don't know. I think it works for them to handle running the network.
It could be interesting. That's all I'll say. And I to be honest with you, like I hope that if that happens, that the price doesn't change to it, because you know that's what part of, you know, a lot of people are saying is that, you know, the WWE network's going to die because, you know, Vince is losing money and he's going to start charging $60 for pay per views and that kind of thing again. So I hope not either.
I hope not. WWE is down today, by the way, their stock $44.47. They're down, and they're down $38 over the past year. So if you were looking to buy WWE stock, now might be the time.
I'll have to get on Robinhood.
Right? I know. If I was thinking about selling some of my stock and buying some WWE shares, but I'm no stock market expert, so don't take my stock tips and get mad when they don't work out. But so that's going to wrap up our show for the day. We'll be back next week. We'll get more into the weeds with Money in the Bank, and we'll continue our Owen Hart Memorial Tournament and any other WWE news that comes up. I also want to do a wrestling video game based portion of our podcast. I tried to record a little bit of content, forgot to plug my mic in because I'm a professional. And yeah, so we'll talk more about that and get the meat and potatoes worked out on that and kind of go from there. But that's going to do it for this one. Tim, any final thoughts?
No, sir, not tonight.
All righty, cool beans. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Be excellent to each other.